Commissioner, welcome in your team, you and your team. My name is Duncan Chavele, Chairperson of the Platform Committee. And I don't think, do we have new faces here at this introduction?
Yeah,
if we can quickly do that, TG, and then.
So thank you very much. The gentleman that is trying to explain. This is Patrick Limolo, this is the acting CEO of Zimbabwe. And I think one of the questions that has been raised before, we also be clarifying in the presentation pertaining to the CFO position and the compensation fund. I'm not sure whether Ms. Kamu Kumasidu was also introduced before. What?
I don't
remember. For those who can't recall, Mr. Kumasidu is the chief director responsible for human resources management and the compensation.
Welcome, fellow. We have some few apologies. Honorable Makubela Mashele Shele, she's a Zimbabwean, she is working in the election office. But in other elections in Zimbabwe, we have Honorable Hanare. He's attending a health committee meeting. Manamelam, 23rd to the 28th July, Kimberley, Northern Cape. He's a communist, a young one. Line Hendrix. Oh, we had an apology from her yesterday. We don't have a new one. And Anton Albert. Teacher was looking at your website. I have this idea of red card. Yellow card and red card. And I think the committee, we have to discuss them as a committee. And since we cannot give somebody a card, that's very crazy. Thank you very much. I find it very useful and it will be easier to be used by other people than myself. Thank you for that creativity. I take this opportunity to give the commissioner. I'll let you say the teaching. Take us through the program, the presentation. The questions were sent somewhere in February, not March. And I think there were other questions that were sent later. And then as we engage, then answer the question, and then we engage further until, I think, 1 o'clock. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members, for inviting us to the meeting of the Portfolio Committee. I'll ask that the presentation is going to be the responses to the questions as raised previously in our engagement with the Portfolio Committee is going to be led by the Commissioner, the Compensation Fund, the Commissioner of Fund. So, with your permission, Chair, can I ask that we immediately just go through the things of
thank you, DG. Commissioner.
Okay, thank you, DG, and thank you, Honorable Chair.
done for the two professors. Some questions relate to HR, some to finance. On the first question, we asked as to how many employers were referred to the fund during the financial year and how we assessed it. Our response is that during the year in question, we have registered 436,807 requests. And out of that, 281,870 of these employers were assessed for the same period. And I just put a background to the process. Because as we proceed, you realize that there's a drastic change in the legislation and assessment. The manner in which the fund operates is that the employer is assessed for a year that has passed. Let me just give an example. For the financial year 2013 now, we assessed March to February 2012, March, 1st of March 2012, to 31st of February, so 29th of February 2013. So the current assessment that we're doing relates to the year that has passed. So what happens then is that employers are reminded during the course of December, January, to remember the filing date. And in the year in question, the filing was done manually. Since employers would have to fill in the return post them to the compensation fund. And because of the rigorous process that was required, we have to stamp the forms when they arrive, just to indicate a date you received the form, because that has implications for penalties and interest. Because if the form was received on time before the expiry date, interest and penalty does not apply. So that's why it has to stand first. And thereafter, it's taken to the section, for the assessment section of the fund, where they'll start capturing this thing into the computers so that we can be able to generate the invoices and post the invoices. And that is why you see that the number of employers who have a certain number of assessments is designated to be certain. You find that in that particular year, you may end up not having assessed all the employers. They've sent the forms, but not all have been. When comparing claims registered by provinces, Gauteng province with 93,000 claims and accepted 103 claims. Question two relates to the actual report of incidents by employers and the processing of those accident claims. Now, because the system operates on a manual basis, you find that by the time the year ends, you still have claims that were reported in the previous year that are still being processed in the current year. That is why you find that we have registered 93,000 new claims, but when you look at how much we processed in the previous, we processed 103,000. It means that some of it seems that the process relates to the year that is passed. So I think that is why there is a big discrepancy. On page 3, question 3, sorry. On page 31 of the annual report, the total number of claims registered using SEP system is 23,000, and claims accepted were 18,000. This is an enormous amount of claims rejected when compared to claims processed by provinces. Does the new SEP system make
please provide detailed response. And the response will be that all claims registered are scanned and indexed. However, if documentation is incomplete, it will be difficult to adjudicate such a claim. The adjudication process will be delayed, thus impacting on the decision on whether to accept or reject the claim. For example, an employer will send an evidence report to say, this is what happened, the contractor got injured whilst at work doing this task, and either probably the shoulder or the hand or the leg. And for us to be able to adjudicate, we need the first medical report from the treating doctor to say, I've indeed seen Mr. Nkonto, and indeed he was injured on the shoulder and the leg. So there is correspondence between what the employer is saying and what the doctor is saying. So then the adjudication process will then prove that claim, then it will be accepted. And once it is accepted, it's pronounced on our website. And doctors and service providers will access that information from the website for them to start sending invoices to the company for payment. Before acceptance, they don't send invoices. They wait until they accept. In the case of incomplete information, CF does not reject such claims, but requests additional information to assist in deciding whether to accept or reject the claim. The CF system registered 23,000 claims. And 13,000 out of these 23,000 were accepted for liability. The 9,601 claims that were not accepted were due to more information needed, as I was saying. So then, the next question I think relates to HRF.
What I think almost wants to make your follow up. Because I'm not feeling that this logic is here. Because you say, please provide a detailed report. And then you get five lines and you call that in detail. I don't know what they should respond to. Because here we're talking systems. Can you, through this system, can this system help you to do everything that you need to know about a claim with one system? Or do you need to use a combination of systems? What are the challenges? Are we having the right system? Are we using the right systems, or are we having a systems problem, challenge? Because I think that is the kind of detail maybe I thought.
In the year in question, I think the system that we run, 2011,
we're using the self-financial system, which was a new system at the time, in conjunction with the e-claim system, which was a system that was approved to be replaced by SEP. However, when we were supposed to go live, we recognized that the service provider was not able to migrate all the information into the new system for us to be able to switch off the old system and work on the new system. And the old system, as much as it's computerized, is predominantly based on manual processes. I'll just give you an example. An employer will complete a form to report an incident. And then they'll post their form, and then we'll receive them, and then we'll capture it into the system to generate a claim number. And then we'll send the claim number to the employer. That is the number that he gives the doctor to be able to submit his accounts. Now the doctor is required by law to submit the first medical report, which is also completed by hand. And then it's posted, and we receive. So if you look at it, by the time the person lands in hospital or before the doctor, he might not have a claim number, because he might still be in the hospital. So what the employer will do is say, normally they complete one form, they post it to the computer, they send the form, they take the patient with that confidence of person. This evidence that we got you here, you are injured on duty. Then the doctor will keep the other accidents report form and then complete his medical report and attach a copy of the accident report to the commissioner for adjudication. So you can find that by the time the accident happened and by the time we adjudicate, a month or two or 3 months they have passed. And now the doctor can't send an invoice for the service that he has rendered because he must wait until we accept liability. So I think those are some of the options, but all these things is done manually. And even the adjudication, that's why the screen, we put in the screen where you read the employer's report of accident. And you also compare it with the employer's report and read both to say that this information gels. If it gels, then you accept liability. If, for example, the employer says he injured his leg, and the doctor says, I treated the head, so that two different things. So we have to send back this information to the employer. So there's a discrepancy between what you're saying and what. So that takes a lot of time, and it delays the submission of invoices to the client. And now, the modern system that we intend rolling out, all these processes will be done electronically. The employer will register his claim from where he sits and get the same number, submit it to the doctor. He can actually take the patient with the same number because that thing's generated automatically. That's our intention. So the doctor also, after treating the patient, they can pass this information to the clerk who can capture immediately. So within 24 hours, the claim will have been adjudicated and accounts can start flowing after that. And the other challenge will be if the person needs attention again by the doctor, for example, to be re-examined, the form is completed to request permission to reopen this claim because the doctor wants to see the person again. So if those delayed, but the process is manual, it works via the portal system. That is why we find that you'll always have a backlog. Maybe related to the previous year in the union. Because we might be receiving a case of, our financial year started in March, in April, ends in March. There might be an accident in March. But the fund only receives it maybe in May, the report. So that's what's happening in a new year. That is going to be affected in the previous financial year. So those are some of the discrepancies that we're sitting in.
But I don't think
that
when you say detail,
seems that the system is where the problem is occurring, where the claims aren't being accepted because of the lack of information or they're not being filled in properly by the employer. You said that you registered 436,807 employers. Do they all know how to fill in a form properly? And this current system that you're using, was there any interaction between employer organizations, labor organizations, healthcare organizations in order to come up with a process in order to make these claims that everybody accepted? Or are you just imposing what you think is the best way forward on this? So I want to know if there's any consensus, or did you just get a consultant to tell you that his system was the best and then you went for that system? Thank you.
Chair, I at one stage, I thank you very much. I used to work in an organization where there was no office, no telephone, no transport. 10 regions, 40 sub-regions, and 20 zones, 4,000 branches, without a telephone, without transport, without any fire. I'm trying to understand this in terms of experience. The systems that will be used, that's mine. I think at one point the experience will show, depending, because cases might differ from case to case, in terms of the weight of the size and the shape of the case. Apparently, how long will it take for one case to be processed, post? Form filled, the doctor comes in, form is posted, you receive it, you process, ask questions, you compare. After it's now long with it in terms of the details of the person. How long would it take? And what does an ordinary worker expect in terms of time?
Chairperson, we have some questions regarding the acquisition of SAPS as a system. And I think during the previous presentation, you mentioned the name of another software system. I think it was Rand Mutual Insurance. When it was found that SAPS was not quite suitable to the requirements of the fund. Now, obviously, I think we need to know a lot of money, according to a parliamentary answer, has been spent on the acquisition of SAPS. I buy something from somebody who tells me that, you know, this is a racehorse or a race car, and then I find out that it isn't suitable. How much of my money can I then recoup? And how much did you try to get back some money? Also, in another question, or in your answer, it was said that, for example, under the SAP system, order for payment of providers was approved, a double payment was made to a value of 21 million, and you've been able to recoup 3 million of that. It just doesn't seem as if the systems are in place to ensure that service is of the standard that people can accept. So, and we all belong to medical aids, which, you go into the pharmacy, you go to the doctor, the next moment you get either an SMS or an email or saying to you, this claim has been accepted, this is rejected, you're going to pay for me, 60 rand of the 100 rand claim, that kind of thing. Are you on that level already in terms of the software at present, or what is the expectation?
Get the form from the employer. We should get
how we got technology. He captured that in a public, put both in the file, in a brown file, loop and make a decision, and pass the file to somebody to ignite the next process. Now, what has happened is that we have now using the computer to perform the same thing that we're doing at that. What is the advantage we have in the speed with which we can retrieve information? Because in a patch and then you can see what's in the screen. That's what Patrick asked me for a while to do, but I think that's the improvement that we have now, in the speed of retrieval. What we have not achieved was making the process more efficient and more faster. And what I did when I arrived, I don't want to be seen to be giving excuses. It's a fact. When I was asked by the Minister of Labour to go to the Home Minister to make the change, the first thing that I did was to look at where the Benin platform was. That's where the problem is. And claims the environment was. We had a case sitting in the network at the time from business out of here pushing for action. We commissioned the inquiry, and the rain was there to commission at the time. And the inquiry came back and said, in South Africa we have what is suitable for the context of it. We don't have to go abroad and look for something. The rent neutral system is closer to business. And it's 90% fit. What the consultant is, Mr. Rich was to say. On the issue of scalability, then we have smaller competitors go and sort out the issue of scalability for you to be able to handle with much volumes. And I think at the time we requested the FDG to allow us and the minister to produce on a power basis. That was that. We did a proof of concept, we did the pilot. And we reported on a and we then agreed with Siemens to say, we are going to take this portion of work out of the triple B, because indeed we have not been able to assist. And we agreed. Unfortunately, the other DG arrived and came to this parliament and reported that SAP is the solution. It was used by the bank as a design. And we had to turn the system. And Siemens had to implement the SAP system. The challenge with Siemens that we had at the time. They didn't have the capacity. They had admitted themselves. They didn't have the capacity. SAP, as a German solution, does not have the critical aid solution. They have solutions in mining, they have solutions in petrochemical industry, they have financial solutions in the banking, insurance environment, but not in the medical aid space. And Siemens didn't have also the capacity. That human resource to manage that. They were not, even before they sold out their company, they were not a SAP provider. They were not on the list of providers of SAP systems. I think they used the German to German relationship to acquire. I think that's what happened with SAP. However, I must also be positive. I think the SAP financial system that they gave us. System needs to be fixed here and there. However, the ICM, which is the claims environment, I think that they have did manifest, and we have received a report from the auditors, which were commissioned now internal audit to look at post implementation. And I think they've indeed advised that we must do away with the ICM system. Because there's too much customization. There was no business case for the system. They've also indicated that the cost of fixing the current SAP ICM
money is very challenging. So we hope to implement that system with the support of the current provider, which is DOH, which is, I believe, a reputable company from the cement, highly reputable. And I think the interventions that they need, the space that they need, the department, the field that they need, the impact can be. I think that's the background to the consensus issue. On the issue of average time, on our strategic plan, we normally say 90 days. That is assuming that all the documentation is there. It should take another 60 to 90 days. So with the information that might be outstanding, it might go beyond 90 days, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. It will depend on each and every case. I think for workers it's a raw deal, because you can't wait to be compensated. That assume that you lost a finger or you lost a hand, you really need that money to make up. If you have lost a limb, you need that prosthetic. You don't have to wait for 6 months. You need to go back to work and do something. So you need that device. So for me at the moment, situation is good. Good. The issue of, I think the CIO in the last meeting when we were here, he had indicated that there's a process that we're looking at recovering some costs from the service provider. But it, this whole thing is building the contract, so our success or non-success will depend on the legal interpretation as to. And on the issue of double payment, I think it was a once-off mistake which happened where stories say that IT, because what the business does is that they process. Once they process, they hand over to IT to do the payment, to run the payment. And somebody in IT press the button to us. And I was fortunate enough before coming here yesterday, because I had service providers sleeping in the office, not wanting to do it that day. And I went to the teacher question, what is the story? And then I learned from the people who support that no, the banks can only accept payment once. You can't do multiple payments today. I then went to APSA without announcement to this acting CIO. And I found a different story that multiple payments are possible. But I think the training of the people who are doing this thing was not provided. So I had to sit there and see that all the students were doing this thing. But I think there's a lot that needs to be done in training.
That's been like to
who? Yes, the official. She was also there. I took it after that. I went after to explain to me how possible such a big institution to pay to one pay run a day. And then it emerged that in 2011, 2011, when they implemented the new system, I think there were some glitches in the format that Siemens was giving to APSA. What was resolved at the time was to say, just do one try, check it for quality, everything is compliant, and then get the product. I think that was a one-off thing. It was not something that was a standard to fix what was there before. But I think the staff took it to mean 170. And I think that's what he said, that he said, he said, we're not sure what that amount of people need to be done. Second thing that I also people picked up was the file comes in electronics. Somebody draws the file, does something on it. He does not do anything. Something like that. Change things. It's just to move the file from one box to another folder, and from the other folder to another folder. And I realized that this is the cause of the backlog. But if I'm sick for 2 days and I'm responsible for moving this file, because I have a technical know-how to do that. So what I requested yesterday was to say, how do I automate this process? The person who processes and finalizes, once he gives instruction for payment, the next steps must just happen automatically. It must not be moved by person from one point to the other. So those are some of the enhancements that we're trying to speed up the payment. So the payments are happening faster, but the distribution of money from our services.
We are sure that in shortening this distance, we are not doing it at the expense of quality of checks and balances. Honorable Cruises.
Thank you, Chair. Just for clarity, when you refer to the IT staff, you're referring to senior staff. They had the wrong impression that only one payment. It's always the worker who suffers. And it's because of the systems. Because in reality, we find a situation where the accident report from the employer differs to what the doctor is saying that I've treated him because of this injury. The worker is suffering. Mind that the worker will not be a worker. So that's why. No, with the attempts of fast tracking the claims and the decentralization of computing fire services. would you then say at least that does help because if you decentralize the services of the compensation fire to provinces, what is the impact given the centralized system of local claims? The chairperson said, I can say you can speak outside.
Let me check. I think the current process is not like this. It's not like this because Victoria is a central proposition. We've decentralized the piloted option. Employers said before, then you can
tell them the system on the table, that's where we are for the table. The doctor in line will report and get a bag of the same. Give it to a doctor to submit the report and assist the board so that we can start sending invoices electronically. So at the moment, we still getting those invoices from the machine that is produced, printed them with paper, put into boxes, and then we start settling them back just by hand. So I think the advantage of the RNA system is that not better for us. The employer can submit an account of the business to be each SSC, whether in Victoria or in Cape Town or where our offices are, we will be processing this. If you are in Cape Town, you send it electronically, you flow to Cape Town. If you are in Germany, you flow to Germany. Even Germany will process it. And the supervisor can decide, given the workload, to say, not in Cape Town, does not have workload, they can move work to Cape Town, which is not possible. If it comes electronically through workflow, you can spread the workflow to others. Then you can improve the speed of the process.
But is my little worry is that you earlier you said you got the system that you could put in from the insurance. And then the senior came and said, no, we are not going to use this as you said. That was the said.
Yes.
And what we ended up using wasn't really helpful compared to what we wanted to. But I'm saying, you know, the challenge here is that, you see, if we flatter when our leaders form, so we're not worthy of the fight. Maybe I'm using a different thing that do not necessarily apply when it comes to management or in the public service. But if I'm convinced that CG, where you are taking us, you're not taking us anywhere, I think I'll be able to differ with you in this meeting and say, no, this thing is not going to work. But the dangers of that in the public service is that then if you cross the TG, you actually ask him for trouble.
You end up using Chinese
law. But I'm just saying that I think we need to go beyond this code. If somebody is convinced that this thing is not going to take us anywhere, I think we must find a way of fighting those battles before the presentations are made to the House. Because you see, as the chairman of the portfolio committee and our members here, we are not IT people. But we listen to logic as you make presentations. And then we check back, does this thing tally with reality? And if you've got people who have their way with words, they can sell you what you already have at home. And then you go home and find that you actually have, three of the same thing in different packages. I don't know, but I think this is a challenge to us. I mean, presently, how sure are we that the system that we are bringing now, is it going to work? Is there somebody who's got doubts about this? And that's when, you know, when we look at the report sometimes, I'll ask, but what was the minority view on this issue? Particularly which of the person who's going to use the system, not the principal. this be practical? Can it help you move from point A to point B? I think that is the challenge that we need to do. Otherwise, we're not going anywhere. Next year will be a presentation. No, actually, the DG pushed us to take. But because it's the Macrobus, we just agreed. In fact, this thing is not working. So we're not going anywhere. Yeah, I think we should move on to the next one.
And you say, am I correct, Commissioner? I know I was in this committee when the issue of life mutual assurance was used. That system, it was good. And when it was changed, also I was still here. Am I correct now? No, it was not. It was not you. I know. I know it was not you. It was before you. You came after somebody was here. So now, are you going back to run mutual assurance? I'm asking this because at that time when run mutual assurance was used, yes, there were problems here and there, but they were not to understand where it has been. Now, are you going back to run mutual assurance? If yes, in what terms?
I was run mutual assurance in farming, so you guys are not sick. I'm not sick. Yes, I am. I worked with you last year, then until here, then. Now you can come to me. You just come up to your side. You just get so tired. Honorable Mazurum.
Chair, while I agree with you, we need to move on and try to use time effectively. You see, my worry is one. The example might not be exactly the same. You see, in military parlance, we say, the best commander is the one who is with the subordinate on the actual battlefield. The example might not be that. But we are talking here of a practical, possible, manageable things, ordinary, simple. You see, the language that we use in the body will always differ from the language that we use at the operational level. And the most experienced person in terms of hands-on is the person who is involved on the actual day-to-day work. That's the most experienced person. The manager in the boardroom might be this way, theoretically, of course. As a person at the operational level, at the actual level of work, that's where we need to go to. Because you see, the things that we're saying now in this boardroom might not necessarily have any impact on the actual service delivery. Because the more we delay these things at this level of the boardroom, I can imagine what's going to happen at the actual level of life, where extra life takes place every day, every hour, every day. In when you go to a battlefield, you always make sure there is a fallback position. Because if you made on the spot the collision, and the situation changes like the weather in the Western Cape, every 4 hours, what is your fallback position? So I'm trying to say, while we need to move on and use time economically, but we need to be practical. It's quite some time now, it's almost 20 years.
I listen to the
the information is not accurate or it's tampered with, then you're not going to be able to achieve what you are achieving. If you are to lose, for example, the military scenario, comrade, I would think Operation Double Touch. The same thing. You go there, this is the target, and you realize that there is actually something that is not in the picture. And that's disorganizing you. But I think let's move forward, you see. But if we need to work on correct information and not use emotions. You know that this company, these are my friends, so, and I promise them that we'll give them this project, but we'll give them to you, we'll give it to them for 2 years, then we can go back to them mutual, you know, for proper delivery. Now we are still missing each other as friends. That's the way that we
No, Chair, just briefly, I think where we started off was, I think we took a bit of a reflection, even in briefing this a portfolio committee. We said that there was work that was undertaken previously, standing on that, which then showed that we needed to go behind the trunk in direction. Now, what is then currently happening is that we are revisiting at the very same position given experiences and so on. So, I think all I can say, because I think I hear this concern about how sure are we, how can we be sure that this system will work and so forth. My opinion is that we can only be given time to be able to assess that situation, in particular because the approach that we're also taking is a pilot approach. Now, pilot, by its very same kind of nature, it means you're putting a particular exercise to a test. You've got to draw certain lessons out of it and look at how you can affect your way forward and so on. So the piloting approach itself, I think, will then be able to assist us in ascertaining a shortage of some less for the concern that was in the conducted. But I think we do note some of the particular concerns related to it. But we can only make an effort on our side. Of inefficiencies and other challenges that we're faced with the
Thanks. The question that we asked by Scopa, when were you with Scopa last year? And I think the questions that we asked you are still relevant questions to us. Yeah. In terms of what actions have you taken to correct? You cannot say that it was an oversight on the part of the manager or of the staff members. There's no oversight here. Oversight is done by us. If there's any oversight, it's this side, not on the other side. On your side, Chief, is the manager did not apply his mind or her mind. We made mistakes, we did not check this and this and that. And the PFMA tells us what to do when it comes to those kind of things. So that is the language we want to hear, because that is the only thing that will help us to monitor and ensure that we get value for our money. We are like the boss here, the bigger boss. And if monies are not used in the way we agreed on how they should be used, it's us who should cut them. And I think we should start thinking alongside those lines on the remaining of that. We must make that city, raise the temperature on that city. be one and done, you know. And if we both make mistakes, we can learn from mistakes. But if we say this is not the correct thing and you continue and you do it and you are proved wrong, there should be consequences. We cannot have a party after failing. Definitely not. Let's move on. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairman. On the question of the number of managers who were employed in terms of the 2007 organization as such, the responses is divided into two. The first one will deal with the post in the senior management team. During the period 2007-08 financial year, the fund had four senior managers, namely the professional, the CFO, and two directors who were responsible for medical and compensation services. The CFO and the director compensation were suspended and subsequently discharged from the public service. It is important to note that the director compensation was subsequently reinstated following an appeal in the labor court. There was a personal process, and she lodged an appeal through the normal processes, and she was reinstated following it. But also that the fund then continued to operate without until the new structure was approved by the minister in 2009. As you will know, the new CFO was appointed in 2009, but you also know that the person subsequently left, which means that we had the post of the CFO vacant since April 2012. But then a person was brought in as a consultant who acted in that post. And then you also know that the services of that person was suspended for some allegations that have been investigated, hence we having an active post. On the post in the middle management services, we had, in terms of the structure of 2007, we had 21 posts on the establishment. And of these, two employees were suspended and subsequently discharged from the public service. It is important to note that the minister then approved a new interim organizational structure in 2008. And in terms of this new structure, there were 13 senior management posts. So remember I said in there we had four. Now the minister then approved the interim structure to have 13 senior management service posts, and 12 of these were filled during 2019 financial year. I'm not sure whether I should continue on that question.
Just for clarity, the suspensions, what were they for? And just a comment about, you know, somebody else or made allegations made against somebody, and then they go to court, and they go to the labor court, and they appeal, and then they are cleared. How rigorous are our processes before we actually put people on suspension and judge them, or disciplinary processes? In other words, we don't just accuse people because we don't like their faces.
This is a tricky question in the sense that there are rules that you have to follow in the public service in terms of the processes that you follow in terms of charging the person. Obviously, if there are allegations that they've been put before a person, there's always a two ways. It's either a person is cleared or the person is found guilty. So although there will always be those kind of processes, because you then appoint an independent person, only hear the evidence that the employer will put before the chair of the hearing to say that these are the allegations, and then you then have the accused also being given an opportunity to then present his or her case. And then on the basis of the information that has been provided, the chairperson of the hearing will then make a finding, which then becomes a recommendation on the balance of the information that has been provided. He or she will then arrive at a conclusion to say whether a person is guilty or not.
On the issue of why were these people suspended?
I think I will ask the commissioner to give details on that, because I'm not.
Commissioner, I think there were various allegations relating to the government, to Rani's laws. I found the matters already ongoing. I think the process followed the investigation by independent person. They confirmed the allegations and the judgment were laid before. I think what transpired is that the process beyond the department, for example, the labor court, then they put the whole process to see that they restarted the hearing again. And in most instances that I found is that some of the people who might have been witnesses are no longer available. And the information that might have been used in the first trial might be not fully available in the second trial. And so in most instances, I think that's where I found that we lost most of our cases and everybody in cancer or anything, because the case is raised, it's raised from start. They don't use the evidence that was used in that process. So I think most of the cases that I know that's where we lose
that. I was hoping that the commissioner would say to me, X had purified 100,000 rands or a million rands, because we're dealing here with money. My view is it's probably going to have to do something with money. Then my next question would be, how much of that did you recover, or was it just a lost cost and stuff like that? And what steps have been taken to make sure that this doesn't happen in the future?
I think maybe let's not do it here and now. Maybe say we need to get a written. So that we can apply our minds to it and then engage going forward. I'm telling you, somebody steals from me, I'll make it different. No one will ever steal from me. In case that happens, if he's to live longer, there must be some. I mean, I'm not going to use evidence, but I'll make sure that this person goes to court to get arrested and something gets done, because if it doesn't, I'll end up doing something very stupid at a later stage. Because it will be my money, you know. But if it's somebody else's money, it's, oh no, okay, no.
They usually steal, you know.
But I think the commissioner, we need to run this money like our own personal money. When it's stolen, it's like somebody has stolen from me. And ensuring that if they escape, it should not be because we did not do, record. We didn't keep our records. Because the people who are supposed to give evidence against this person are working with this person. Will the department take somebody amongst ourselves to court for theft, and then we decide on it, because I need to see again next week. So if I give evidence against this person, others will give evidence against me. So let's cover each other in our endeavor to enrich ourselves with public funds.
didn't say, Commissioner, that we will tell everybody about this another litigation against the department, or the department against other people. If it's money, how much was stolen? How much was recovered? If the internal cases when you dismiss a person, it means that there is material evidence that a wrong was done. But then there are other cases where, even after internal processes, you can still lay a charge with the police and send the person to jail. Because if I steal 100,000 rand or 20 million rand, then I know I'll be suspended. And after that, I can go and enjoy the money. It doesn't stop people from stealing. It actually says that it's okay to steal. Because then you can get early retirement with 20 million rand. Please. Let's move on.
Yeah. That's from that. If I leave today, I'll leave in that information to your office. Of all the court cases and so what has been transpired, I want all that information that has been brought forward. And then on these other issues, I'll prepare the response.
Thanks, Chair. With regard to question 5, question 5 was the committee wanted to know how many employees received performance bonuses, particularly why in finance and project management when the audit committee had said that performance of employees was poor. Firstly, in responding to the question, I need to indicate that the number that was used to arrive at that was actually incorrect. Because on the establishment of the compensation fund, at the time we had 109 employees, excluding SMS members. And not 1,818 as indicated in table 57 on page 135. Therefore, this means that the figure of 1,818 was calculated twice, which then gave the impression that more employees were paid performance bonus. However, the correct calculation is provided in table 58 of the annual report. I got the annual report here. And in terms of that table, the correct number of employees who received performance bonus were 155 and not 304. With regard to the Chief Directorate of Financial Management, out of a total of 261 employees who qualified to be assessed for performance, only 50 were paid performance bonus. This figure represents 20% of the entire territory. And then on the project management office, only 2 employees out of 19 were paid performance bonus. This represents 11%. And it is also important for me to then indicate that the employees who were paid these performance bonuses in both chief directorates were below middle management. So there was no one on the front of this director and how we received performance bonuses. With regard to question 6, no senior manager was paid performance bonus during 2011-2012. So we did not pay a member of the senior management team performance bonus. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
check yourself. Can I just ask, they're saying the 20, or you're saying that in the 2011, 2012 year, no senior managers received performance bonuses. Did the same also happen in 2012, 2013 financial year? And if I may, DG, in a previous answer to Parliament, the minister indicated that only two staff members received performance bonuses, and it was clear to me that this must have been people who have been appointed under previous era contracts, it seems. What is the current contractual position? Were those performance bonuses not paid due to bad performance? Were the performance bonuses not paid due to contractual arrangements which have changed? What is the reason why, when in 1 year we still had 155 bonuses paid, that a few years later no bonuses have been paid?
Just in context, Chair, the 155, is it 155? Yeah, the 155 is people below management level. So that's separate from the management level. That's the one thing. And then the second area that perhaps from a contextualization point of view is that performance bonuses are only granted on the basis of sector level. So for an example, if you assess me today, if I were to be assessed today and the panel feels that whatever I'm doing is under normal circumstances and therefore the flexible in my job, then there are no performance bonuses. But if it also feels that I'm either underperforming and so on, there are instruments in the law that have got to be followed in terms of managing performance and ensuring that I'm assisted to actually get to a normal performance level. But suppose I'm performing above expectation, I'm excellently good and whatever, everything that I do, then I'll be awarded a performance bonus. And I think there are various sort of scales at that level. So it doesn't mean that if they have management assessments, it's a given that they will be performance bonuses. So. Thanks, Chair.
Sorry, Chair, can I understand it? You say that there was no exceptional performances in the department and its entities, and therefore no bonuses were paid in the last financial year.
Yes, that's what I'm suggesting in terms of those senior managers having received performance bonuses for 2011.
Yeah,
the year following on that.
Chairperson, the question was also about the year 2012-2013. That's why he doesn't get a bonus. Not performing as a
the less variation as to why.
it must be highlighted that in 2010-11, the business revenue that was 2.6 million, they had to employ us that we couldn't trace, but they had credit. But however, we tried to relocate them, we just couldn't, unable to get most of them by year end. But however, subsequent to that, we paid almost half of those. But we're still trying to relocate some of those employers. And now, of course, in terms of our policy, all the money that is laid in there for over a year or so, that money was being classified as a trading income as part of our unclaimed monies. And for the next financial year, the interest of 14,000 related to the Bishop building that we leased to the Department of Public Works in the Eastern Cape, that is the Bishop building, as well as the cafeteria and the compensation fund. Because in the prior years, the cafeteria, the person who was leasing the cafeteria, were doing that services for free. But we felt that there's something like free lunch, and the person has to be charged for leasing our cafeteria. With regards to the reserves, can I proceed, Chairperson?
Yeah.
Okay, with regards to the reserves that have decreased from 340 million to zero, but this must be understood in context is that we've got three kinds of reserves, that is the non-distributable reserves and the distributable reserves. This one I'm talking about here is the one for the distributable reserves, which is contained into two portfolios. That is the compensation portfolio and the pension portfolio. The 345 million relates to the pension portfolio. In terms of section 70, what does this have to do with the evaluation of the fund after every 3 years? But given the challenges, like Commissioner alluded to earlier, what that we're facing with various backlogs, we prefer them to do it annually for us to know how much is the capital should we put aside for the capitalized value, as well as how much should we put aside for unclaimed money, so for provision for outstanding claims. In this regard, the prior year, the actuaries made the capitalization value for 381 million. And then out of that, we say, no, fine, it's sold for 799 million, plus the 331 that came from the previous year. Now, for us to fund that, we need to fund the capitalized value. Will you be utilizing the investment income that is from the pension fund? So the investment income was 807, hence we resulted in us having an overcover of 340 million. Now in the following years, that 340 million, the actuaries recommended that we put aside 2.7 billion for the pensioners. So should something happen, that we'll be able to pay them. But then our investment income was only 842 million. And then there was a shortfall of 1.6 billion. Then that one was funded from the compensation reserve. Hence, the pension portfolio and the reserve thereof ended up being a zero balance. Furthermore, on question number 9, the committee wanted to understand why the board members' fees have decreased substantially over it from, I think it was 1.8 million to 414,000. I must highlight the following, that the members must be aware that, the honorable members must be aware that our board is an advisory board. It's not really a executive board like the SABC and stuff like that. However, this, in real terms, the money didn't reduce as such. It's just that as part of that, there was a doctor who was also a medical assessor, who's also advising the TCOD, which is the subcommittee of the board. So when we captured him on our system, we earnestly captured him as a board member instead of him being a medical assessor. So that is why all those monies were, however, ended up in part of the board members' fees. Well, about 864,000 was paid to him. So the anomaly was found and then it was still rectified in the following year. But however, the doctor in question, his contract has since expired. Then on question 10, And the question is, when is the project still going to be ready to report up to the portfolio committee on what they plan to do with the first 3 years? The Director General's project plan was ready, as we speak, I think it's ready, and I think it will be reported back to the portfolio committee in the end of this month. Now, question 11, has the project plan, has the project team been able to draw the terms of reference detailing what needs to be done? The terms of reference were finalized and were published, and then the tender was also advertised. The evaluation of the proposal to the prospective service providers were also completed. I can say with confidence that as a chairperson of the BAC, we'll be adjudicating this thing next week Monday. I think it should be on the 29th. On question 12, when is the public protector's report on the compensation fund going to be provided to the portfolio committee? The compensation fund, as we speak, has never received an investigation report from the public protector. Once the public protector submits the report to the compensation fund, it will be made available to all the members, honorable members of the portfolio committee. And then question 13, when is the forensic investigation into the affairs of the compensation fund going to be initiated, and what is the time frame? The request for proposal was advertised in the print media on the 3rd of March 2013. The evaluation has since been concluded, and then the adjudication will be done also on Monday. As I said, I think it will be the 29th. For us to appoint the person who will be in charge to do the company that will do the forensic investigation at the compensation fund. I think as far as I can go, Chairperson.
Clarification. If you go back to your question number 8, the response which refers to the actuaries. Now these are trusted guys. These are the guys who give us the advice to make sure that we put away whatever it is. And that ended up with a deficit of 1/6, you know, the 1 million that we talked about, which had to be taken up out of the reserves to do that. What information did it actually base the recommended number? Because it looks like they actually miscalculated that.
All my questions goes to the commissioner, and the commissioner can decide who should answer the question. Because for the commissioner, so who's giving the answer?
Thank you, Chair. I'll request the acting chair for the
Honorable Chairperson. It must be highlighted that this is not really a miscalculation. What the actuaries will do, they need the data for the past 10 years to predict what will happen in the future 10 years. Now, what they said to us is based on the current setup of your pensioners, you need to put aside 2.7 billion. Should for the future, just in case something happens. That's a provision. But normally what, as a compensation fund, we're finding those things within the investment program. So if there's no money, based on our policies, to cover that, we also go into the compensation reserves. It's just taking money from one pocket to the other pocket. There's just no miscalculation on this part.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. I take that point. I'm really waving a yellow flag here. You gentlemen are probably aware of what has happened at Transnet Pension Fund. This is stuff like this where the projections, yes, the projections wobble a little bit, and subsequently something nasty happens, and then the pensioners cannot get either an increase. Because now we have exhausted all reserves of that. So I'm just waving a yellow flag that when something like this happens, initially it might look like it's okay. It's a one-off. If it trends, then we've got to start worrying about it, because
end up telling you, as you know, we're dealing here with the pension money here. Pension money. These are the most sensitive people among the judges. Just a year of lecture.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I hope it is you. Just a quick one. In terms of applicants, the applications, how many applications did we have and how many were shortlisted? Just to give a sense of what kind of talent we have, talent pool we have for this kind of position.
Yeah, I want to indicate that the first round of the publication resulted in no candidate found. And then we then resorted to the next level of appointment, which is the headhunting process, to basically give guidance as to how you do it. When a company was appointed, identify suitable candidates. And five candidates were identified, and they were reviewed by the department. Can be sent to the minister to approve that they can be interviewed, and also for the panel that was going to provide the interview. That was done. And once that was done, meeting that was like four candidates made it, and one could not make it because of the day in the interview. And out of the four, one was identified to suitable. As a requirement, we need to subject it to an independent assessment. And that was done, and which resulted in a recommendation to the minister.
Also, also it seems to me a perception that the conversation fund may be a graveyard for the senior manager. If you look at the recent history, what has happened to previous CFOs and acting CFOs and the result, and we really need to turn that perception around as well. If we really want people, there are more than four highly qualified accountants, CFO caliber in this country. But I'm concerned that people are not putting their names in the hat, despite what I believe to be quite good compensation offered by at those levels. And that is a concern.
No. I wasn't intending this not to react, but I think it's a political question that needs to be had. Just to throw in the, for instance, you know, if you were to look at what the public service offers in terms of attracting, you know, personnel, we have found one thing that, for instance, the ideal situation for a CFO is to find a chartered accountant. You can't attract a certain chartered accountant at the kind of rates that we offer in the public service offices. It's not because people are short necessarily. You know, they are shortage of people. I experience that, so I somewhat disagree to that extent. If you were to ask me in the Department of Labor and say, let me recruit a CFO from a municipality, I would not be able to afford that CFO. You know, precisely because at the municipal level, they have a different scale, whatever. So those are some of the complexities that compound the problem in terms of attracting the requisite skills and skills.
What is the sort of salary band that we are looking at that we can offer to a CFO at this level? Because the budget of the compensation fund is far bigger than we need in many municipalities. But are we looking at 800,000 rand in maximum? Are we looking at
1,000,000? If a chief director level, let's say 900,000.
Okay,
so I'm going to move on to question 15. Thank you. Question 15 relates to the payments to the medical providers, which resulted in medical providers threatening to withdraw their services. I must indicate that the DG started the process in December, which I think is in January 2013, the new provider, EOH, was able to put together a project that has helped us to speed up the processing of the medical accounts and clear the backlog. And to date, I can report that the hospital accounts have been processed through the medical electronic system EOH is using. And that's from January 2013 up to date. An amount of 325 million was paid to the private hospitals. The funds have decentralized payment from the account to all provinces. The medical accounts processed today. Now, the detail here is that the EOH project is handling all the bulk payments of your Mediclinic, your Netcare, your Life Health. And also there are other big providers which are your third parties, Comsol, Quedlink, DDC, Jolene. Those other providers also have moved to the electronic portal. And with that, I think the third parties draw their business from a large number of small doctor operations. And from the statistics that I've been looking at and studying, I think over 60%
since requested that we engage with the IT and our IT supervisor generate these accounts electronically so that we can put them into this UH process and get them paid as soon as possible so that we can have an intervention by the government. And I think they have assured that they will do the same. I think the same happened with Musa, we met last week, and we've made that request to them as well. If they, any doctor or any service providers, accounts that they will pay, meeting, question 16.
Sorry, before you go there, I've just got a question on question 15. Can you reassure this committee that this isn't going to happen again with regards to the, you know, you're saying that you're going to update the system, speak to all the role players, deal with the backlogs, and hopefully it will go down to zero, but in the future, is there mechanisms in place to stop it from happening again?
I think it's a very difficult question, and so I might not be there in the future to ask that. But from the current arrangement, what we're doing, we are using the EOH process. Maybe let me give the details of what is in the plan. What is in the plan currently is that we have accepted with Busa and with Sama, but they claim that they have accounts dating back to 2005. That doctors were discouraged, they didn't want to bring them. So what I've said is their judgment, their money. You can't use the financial regulations to say if a debt is over, you know, it is prescribed. So we have offered, we made that offer to them to say, let's find a way we could automate the submission of those accounts. And if they're valid accounts, we settle them. And the intention, if the management team supports, is working very hard on this one, is to issue that debt once we have received all this, to say that all providers who might still be having old accounts to submit them by a particular date. And after that date, we'll prescribe. So that is one step we're going to do. The other one is to create momentum on this EOH thing that we have the least backlog, if there's any, we should not have any backlog. So that when the regulatory process comes in, if we're to decide from the pilot, it comes in an environment where there's not an environment that we're going to last. And we believe that the 6 months that we include for the pilot, it should be the period we eliminate the backlog and the period to address all, as the DJ said, learn the lessons and address them in the future solution that we're going to do. I think that's the intention. But what may happen in the future, I cannot predict. But I think the intention is to ensure that this thing has not happened. Because I'll give you an example. The current legislation that we're putting up, is designed for that decision. Because what it says is that you can't return to work early if you don't even get the best medical attention. So it's going to force the office of the commissioner to correct protocols with the doctors and the service providers. Once a person is injured, there should be no issue about who pays what they will pay. The person has to be treated, rehabilitated, and sent back to work. So the emphasis is going to be on the worker, no more on the service provider. So I believe it will change the ballgame once the new law is established. There's no cost that is not happening. No worker must stay longer for not getting the product. And no hope of going back to work. On question 15, on the issue of incentivizing employers to use their work, since it has been proved that leads to higher rates. An example was given that 6 million was invested in 2 weeks when the year was the 2 hours pay pass.
right direction, so it could actually be better. The question I have is with reference to question 15 and throughout, the commissioner has been commenting very favorably about the EOH intervention. Now, in terms of the situation as it stands, EOH is a stopgap provider. What are we doing to prepare ourselves for this, you know, after this 1 year wedding? What do we have in place to make sure that it looks like there is traction now, and if we don't put something in place on a permanent basis, we could again regret or regress. Just wanted to know, Chair, what's in place.
With regards to that, we are currently engaged in a process post-November 2013 in terms of just mainly to three areas. One is the question of course getting a new service provider in place who has also has sort of taken account most of these particular factors that have been cited. I think the second area of course is about building required levels of internal capacity within the Department of Labor itself to be able to manage our IT environment differently in the future. That's the second area. Of course, that we are going out for a hybrid kind of model as opposed to where we come from, which is attended the kind of difficult problems that we experienced in the past couple of years. So that's currently the kind of work that is undergoing. We were hoping, and we had committed ourselves to the date of the 26th of this month, July, to actually publish the tender for the new IT service provider. We are still working yet towards that, but you know, of course, I don't want to take much time off this committee. There are other issues that have also started cropping up that I need to go back and give the space and see whether we are in.
We have appointed an external contractor to do repairs and maintenance of all the existing buildings in that area. And we also appointed a plumbing contractor to be the same for the plumbing works. And the structural engineer was appointed to evaluate the building structure. And they have since found that the building was sound, because at some stage it was said that we were sitting on the because of the amount of paper that we generate, the building was not stable. But I think the engineers have since assured us that the defense are
fine.
Maybe that's
on the top floor.
check. What was the rule of power in that?
Only in the case of Bishop, where Public Works is the member of this, is our tenant in our building, we have allowed you to do a new maintenance. I think the office space requirements have also been attended, and that's when we employ new people, they need to change.
Just wondering what the engineers recommended for the leading building. Is it secure? Did they just say, oh, it's okay, just reduce the amount of paper or whatever?
Smooth the type across.
Email and the latest one of this has come 4:30 yesterday. So a lady approaching us. I have a small business, not quite 3 years old. I employed two ladies and in March 2012 saw that I had to register with UIF and workers' compensation. The UIF was fairly uncomplicated and I'm successfully paying my monthly bills. However, 5 months after applying to register with workers' comp, I eventually received a form requesting return of earnings. I immediately submitted this. Since then, I have sent numerous emails requesting an amount to be paid and where. All I got is an acknowledgement of my email and nothing further. Eventually, in March 2013, I sent all the documents by post with a covering letter. To date, still nothing. The phone is pointless. I've tried on numerous occasions and you just get the recording over and over and over. You never get anyone to assist. One of these days, I'm going to have to pay penalties, which will be grossly unfair, as this department does not seem very competent. please help. I really don't know where else to turn. What must we say to people like that? Because this is, as I've said, this is the latest one in my inbox. Surely there must be something wrong. People say emails go unanswered, phone calls go unanswered, hard copies mailed to the compensation fund goes down. What else can people still do? I know people that have used the walk-in centers that also sometimes come back and say it wasn't such an easy experience. And this is a lady, I take it, she may be here, you know, not close to the door.
I come from school. Thank you. very nice, but now it's been vandalized. And I think the DG, the managers there are women. We only saw four women. Yeah, and they're doing their best, but you can see they are afraid. They are scared. They are scared because of security, people are attacked, and that kind of thing. I just thought it might be very interesting if someone from your level would go and see them and find out that they told us they can't even have an official car. They have a nice garage there, but they can't have a car, an official car, because they can be stolen. You know, so it's quite frightening. They don't have a phone at the front desk because that thing will be ripped off. The community seems to be just on banana.
Thanks, Chair.